ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do interviews. Joining us now from the Chicago Bulls, Wendell Carter Jr.
Appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, man, good to have you, man. How you been?
I've been good, man. Just trying to get the body right, get ready for the season.
Yeah, if I say, I guess we are right around the corner from getting in on that.
Yep, right there.
So how was that? You know, I know you were hurt for much of it, though, but your rookie year in the league for you, like, how did it compare to expectation?
It was definitely different. You know, me coming in, you know, being a very highly viewed player, you know, coming to the league, like, everybody's good, you know, from the last man on the bench to the starter, so... that was definitely an adjustment, you know, people being a lot stronger than I thought, a lot faster, just being really, really good basketball players. So
it's always interesting when I hear people say that, they're like, yo, everybody here is good. You know, I had a dude once, he used to be a trainer at a gym I worked out at, right? But he's one of these cats that was still trying to make the NBA and he's going to the camps. And he was like, he went to the camp for the Clippers. And I was like, yo, how was that? He was like, yo, man, everybody was good. Yeah. And that's just at the camp for the Clippers, like the guys off the street trying to get on.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, did you have a moment where you looked up and you just realized, oh, wow, these dudes are really good?
First game of the season last year, we playing against Joel Embiid. I tried to make a move on him, and he just took the ball right out of my hand. I was like, oh, okay, all right, let me get my stuff together. You know what I'm saying? So ever since then, I just studied more film, learned people's strengths and weaknesses, because I know just strength on strength, that's not going to beat anybody.
Yeah, so I guess the adjustment from high school to college is not nearly the same.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. The first thing is the 82-game season. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot of games. You're playing 2 to 3 games a week. Like, taking care of your body is huge. You know what I'm saying? Making sure, keeping your mental space good, because there's so many things happening. You know, with you having a lot more money now, you got a lot more distractions. You know, you're able to do a lot more things, so... You got to be able to stay on that straight path and not, you know, go off the path anyway.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say you got a lot more money now. Yeah. Like, you're what, 20 years old
20,
now?
20, yep.
Okay, so, like, it's not just a lot more money. Yeah. It is money, right?
Yeah, money. Period. Yeah.
And that's absolutely. But that's a change, though. Like, I wonder, I mean, like, I do TV now, so, like, my life changed a little bit, but I was in my 30s. Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, as a teenager, like, for you, that first time that you just checked the bank balance, you hadn't checked it in a couple days, and you look at that in the check has dropped in.
Yeah.
What was that moment like for you?
I was excited.
Looking at your face.
That's all I can say, really. Like, I mean, literally coming from, you know, I never had a job before, so I never, you know, was having a steady income. So for that first check to hit and know that that's going to be happening every 2 weeks for at least 4 years, I'm like, wow, This is the life I've always dreamed about.
What was it like, though, that first time you saw them taxes?
That would hurt me. You know what I'm saying? That hurt me. That hurt my soul. Like, and it's nothing I can do about it. That's the worst part. It's like, man, there's no way I can, you know, make it go down a little bit. Nothing. Like, it's going to come out just... Like, you better deal with it.
And I guess it's also, you never had a check. Like, the first time you work at a, like, fast food restaurant or something, you get your first moment on having them taxes come out. And then when you make more, they take more. Yeah. And then you learn that. But you had none of those steps along in the process.
Nothing. Just went right into taking out half my check.
Still couldn't believe it, though, huh?
Still couldn't believe it.
Well, I remember I worked an internship at a major company when I was about 21. Me and my boy, first time we got that check, my man got that check and literally jumped off the ground and clicked his heels. And that was for $5,000 a month. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine that for the NBA game.
It's crazy.
But also, I mean, I guess that comes with some hassles too, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes with you know, a lot of people, you know, watching my pockets now, you know, want to feel like they know everything. Even my closest family members, you know, I had to, you know, talk to them, tell them that, you know, none of us had this kind of money before. So what is it like for me to listen to you if you don't even know, you know, what to do with this kind of money? You've never had this much money, so how can I trust you with it? So, you know, just reaching out, getting
they're trying to get you with this is what you need to do.
Yeah, this is what I need to do, all this, but how can I listen to you if you never had that type of money?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard, you know. It was kind of hard telling them no.
Well, when that happens, who can you listen to, right? Because I think that's fair. Like, I don't know how many people you go talk to about, like, so what was it like when you made $5 million a year?
Yeah. Well, first, I was, my mom knew it, had an accountant, I mean, a financial advisor that she used to work with. So, you know, he works with a lot of, you know, big-time athletes also. So, you know, he came along just kind of showed me what to do, what not to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just save your money, you know, first couple of years and then enjoy it. Like, you can enjoy it now, but don't do anything too crazy. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of just the baseline, just to stack the money right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that was really, and then paying your taxes. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You sure that's on point too. So
yes.
That's really about it.
Like, what was the one thing you had to have though? Like, I'm going to get this one though.
Bought myself a car. As soon as I bought myself a Mercedes S550.
I see you. Hey, man, look here. You ain't got to hide it with me. You can be happy. I know exactly how all these things go, right? Yep. But I say, you 6'10", man. It's hard enough to find a car that you can actually get into.
Facts. And I found that luxury car that I can actually fit in. I'm like, yeah, I got to have it. No doubt about it.
Get in there, inhale that leather, take it all in.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you mentioned your mom, you know, briefly there in that moment, and I've read about her, have not met her, obviously, but she ain't no joke, huh?
No, not at all. Not at all. She, you know, stringing away from just the money side, like, she's very, very strong-minded, is going to voice her opinion at all times, but very respectful at the same time, if you know what I mean? Like, she wants everybody to know, like, she's not afraid to talk about the real problems that's going on around in the world. Like, I remember in college, she talked about the whole, what college really is and what the persona is. And with her being a parent of me going to a very high major school, the differences and just everything. And she doesn't care. She's going to tell you how it is.
Well, that was the thing. I found it very interesting how forthright she was about all of those things and just what it was in college. And it takes on a different level because you went to Duke. And this becomes not just about what she's saying about the world. It becomes kind of specific to Mike Krzyzewski and everything else that was going on there. Yeah. So, like, when she said those things, how did you feel about it?
You know, it didn't really bother me. It didn't really bother Coach K. It didn't really bother, you know, anybody at Duke. They kind of all understood where she was coming from because, you know, it's only so much that Coach K can do. Like, a lot of people above him that kind of run the whole NCAA basketball.
Right.
You know, just to keep it short, I feel like players should get paid. They say you're getting paid by going to school for free. You know what I'm saying? But you're doing more than just going to school for free.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're bringing in revenue for that school. You're doing a lot of things. You're selling out the arena every night. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a job, honestly. It's just like me being in the league.
Well, did you have any responsibilities that you didn't expect from playing college basketball? Because I guess for you, the initial thought is I'm going to play ball, I'm going to go to class. But was there anything that when you got there, you're like, wait, I got to do this too?
No, I mean, it was pretty much simple. You know, go to class every day, go to practice, play games.
Mm-hmm.
Just kept it real simple and just, you know, just was working on getting to the next level.
Yeah, one thing I always wonder about, because I taught a class at Duke many years ago. Okay. I used to be around campus and all of that stuff. And being your height, being who you are with everybody else that was on that campus, like, what's it like for you just, like, walking around?
Yeah. You know, certain days were good, certain days were bad. You know, if I had a really, really good game, like a night before, like, it's hectic me walking around campus. You know what I'm saying? But for the most part, people who go to Duke are pretty well off. You know, they have a really good family. You know, they're high class also.
Right.
So, like, they don't get too starstruck whenever they saw me or anything like that. So, I mean, it just kind of depended on the day, honestly.
Yeah. Somebody once told me, he was a Duke grad, said the fascinating distinction between students at Duke was whether or not your parents had jobs.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's one thing for your parents to have money. It's another thing for your parents to have money and not have to work a job.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Man, so this year, what are you looking forward to this year for the NBA season?
You know, the ultimate goal is to get into the playoffs, you know, with a winning record, of course. And, you know, that, I feel like that's the biggest piece, you know. Of course, I want to grow individually, you know, score more points, get more rebounds. You know, that's, of course, something I want to do. But I feel like when you win, people get paid. Like, I mean, it's a ton of examples from the past to now. Like, Toronto won a championship, people are going to get paid because they won a championship.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel like winning is just ultimately going to help everybody else in the end goal. Coach, players, the training staff, like everybody has a good, like, oh, he went to the playoffs. Like, he knows what he's doing. He took care of his players, you know, things like that.
Now, for you, what's the experience been like playing for Jim Boylan?
It's been good. You know, it started off kind of rough, you know, just to keep it honest.
Yeah, I was about to say, because we heard the early stories, and we were like, dog, what is going on here?
Yeah, it definitely, you know, he definitely brought a shock to the culture of the team. You know, with Fred's a great coach, Great, great coach.
Yeah, but he's a different dude.
He's different. They're two different dudes. And that's what where we struggled, you know, with Jim being the assistant and Fred being the head coach. It was kind of, they were two different kind of people. You know, one person say one thing in a certain way, and the other person say one thing in a different, more like a calmer way. But now with Jim Boylan, now as the head coach, you know, he changed the whole face of it. And we thought at first everybody felt it as a attack on us. So we're like, oh no, like slow down. Like, you're not finna let you do this. But as everybody, you know, as the days went on, more games were played. And then this whole summer, like spending more time with him, like he cares about us. You know, he wants us to win. He's going to do whatever he can to help us win. And he knows that for him to be the coach that we need, he has to bring the best out of everybody. And that's different for each person. Some people can just have a regular conversation with him. Some people need, you know, someone to yell at him, you know, get him in check. So, you know, that's someone I'm definitely going to appreciate, you know, further down my line, like my fifth to sixth year in the league, I'll be able to look back and say, yeah, he really helped my career and kept it real with me since day one.
Now, how did playing for him compare to playing for Mike Krzyzewski? Because it's not like Coach K is some shrinking violet,
See, with Coach K, it's some similarities. Coach K, you know, is going to bring the best out of you in any way he can, which is very similar to Jim. But, you know, Coach K is, you know, once it comes to games and when we're playing, he's more laid back. You know, he doesn't do too much yelling. He doesn't get, like, super, super excited or super, super down. He stays kind of level. But for Jim, he shows his emotions all the time. And, I mean, it's a good thing. For me, I like it. I like when, you know, it shows that the coach is engaged. Not saying Coach K wasn't engaged,
right,
but it shows that Jim, like, really, really cares, and I can appreciate that.
Now, for you, dealing with injury as a rookie, how difficult was that for you, just not being able to play basketball?
It was tough. You know, growing up, I never missed a game. You know, I've broken my foot, played through it. I tore, like, some ligaments in my foot also, kept playing. Like, I probably sat out like two or three games, but I just kept playing. When I've heard about my thumb and that I needed surgery, it just kind of, you know, it brought me down. I was at a low spot for a long time. Like, wow, like, what's going to happen when I come back? Is it going to heal back right? Like, I was just, you know, I needed a lot of good people around me just to, you know, stay in my ear about it. And then I had the surgery on my groin area. And then that took another toll. That kind of screwed up my whole summer. You know, I had a really good summer plan in place and wanted to come back a lot more stronger, faster. Not saying I didn't, but I didn't get to utilize my whole summer like I wanted to. So, but what I can say is my body definitely feels a whole lot better now. You know, everything feels good. Everything feels like how it's supposed to feel. So I feel like this summer I should be injury free and just be able to play.
Now, how helpful were, like, your older teammates? I know the Bulls ain't got a lot of older dudes, but, like, how helpful were those guys in that time? Because they just, like, nobody can tell you what to do if they haven't had all that money. I imagine it's hard to know what to do with that unless you've got people in your ear that have been in the same place.
Exactly. You know, there was a lot of players on my team who, you know, who faced injury also. So, they were able to tell me, like, man, just stay calm. With me being so young, like, that's kind of the beauty of it. You know, you're going to heal up fast and you haven't established anything to the point where it's a huge, huge drop off. You know what I'm saying? So they know Zach to be in particular, you know, with him having the torn ACL, like he dealt with that situation very, very well from what I've seen. So that's someone who definitely helped me through that process.
Now, so looking at this year, you know, you talked about the different things that you want to improve in the game. How do you feel about the team going into this year versus last year?
You know, with us adding a couple of veterans and Satoransky and Thaddeus Young, we're going to be solid, really, really solid. You know, it's always good when someone has an extra year under their belt. You know, I'm going to my second year. Everybody else is now up a year, more experience. Everybody had their full summer to, you know, get individually better. So I feel like, yeah, and we're also relatively young, so we're able to relate with one another and things like that. So I feel like we're going to be really good this year.
So you talk about adjusting the guys being strong in the league. I feel like Thaddeus Young is the adjuster on that matter.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he's been that big since he was like 2006, right? Like since the day he showed up at Georgia Tech.
Facts. And, you know, that's someone I really look up to. Kind of reminds me of myself in a way. He's never been a 30-point-per-game kind of player, but he survived in this league because he did all the little things. And I feel like that's something I can easily do. So that's someone I definitely look up to.
So, like, when you were getting into college or coming, it's like, did you see yourself as a guy that would score like 30 points? Because I feel like the guys in the NBA, you were the man everywhere you were. You could score 30 everywhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was definitely, that was definitely a change for me. You know, start off in high school, I was scoring. I was shooting any shot I wanted to, you know what I'm saying? And then go to college, kind of similar. You know, it was a lot of great players around me, so we shared the ball pretty well. But, you know, I was able to do my own thing. But then when I get to the NBA, it's a lot of great, great, great players. You know what I'm saying? So we just got to learn that, you know, you don't got to score 30 points a game to be successful in this league. So, you know, just find your niche, find something that you're really, really good at and master it.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with more of Wendell Carter. But first, hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones, and that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. I want to talk to you a little bit about Atlanta. That's something we got in common. Yeah. I was born there. My parents lived there. Yeah. That is where you grew up. So, like, what was growing up in Atlanta like for you?
It was great. You know, I grew up in the suburbs, kind of. I went to school in the city. Great city. My favorite city. I feel like it's the best city in the United States. I argue with everybody about that every day. But, yeah, I love Atlanta. I love the people down there. All my family lived there, so it's always great when I go down to play the Atlanta Hawks. It's always good.
Yeah, so you grew up in East Point, and you went to school at Pace Academy in the city. Like, the difference between living in East Point and going to Pace, like, what would you say was the difference there?
I mean, the obvious answer would be a lot more wealthy people, you know, around the Pace area and people who went to Pace. The commute was definitely difficult.
Were you on the train and the bus?
Nah, I drove every day. Yeah, so that was pretty difficult every day. It was like a window. Like, you had to get through that window at a certain time where you're going to be sitting in traffic all day. But, other than that, I mean, it's great people in both East Point and in Buckhead. So, you know, I found a great group of friends.
Like, when you first started going into Buckhead for school, though, was that intimidating at all for you?
No, not really. Cause I knew myself. I was pretty in tune with myself. So, I knew what I brought to Pace. You know, I came in as a very smart and a very good basketball player that they never had before. So
now, were they surprised at how smart you were? Because I know that Harvard was a school that you were considering. And I wonder if they, you know, they think you're just getting in here to come play some basketball, and then they get all of you.
Yeah, exactly. Like growing up, like, if it was more so about me just playing basketball, I wouldn't have went to Pace. You know what I'm saying? And my parents wanted me to go somewhere where I was challenged mentally because they knew this basketball thing wouldn't last very long. So, no, they was looking out for my best interest at heart. So when I went to Pace, it wasn't necessarily to play basketball because they were not good basketball team at all. You know what I'm saying? I brought a lot of great things in terms of basketball to that school, but it was more for my educational piece. And then whatever happens with basketball happens.
And your parents are ball players, right?
Yep, both of them. Dad overseas, Dominican Republic. My mom played at Ole Miss.
Like, do you know or remember at a point when your dad realized, like, oh, hold on, this one I think is going to be good?
Probably when I was like 14, 15, we was about the same height and we used to play in the driveway. And then it was one day, like, I came home, I was mad, like, I had a bad day, and I told him, yo, let's go play 1-on-1. And I kicked his ass, honestly, like, just was killing him. So he knew right there, like, oh yeah, he has that killer mentality, he's going to be good.
Did he ever play you again after that?
Nah. That's the last time. I swear.
Because I'm always curious, you guys, when your dads play ball. Because I know what it's like me playing ball in the driveway of your dad. Your dad is never trying to lose.
Oh, never. It's always a pride thing with that. Like, Never. So it was felt good. It wasn't for me to beat him, but he definitely didn't like it at all.
Did you dunk on him? Did you give one on him?
I don't think so.
No, I know you didn't because you're here. Right? Like, if you dunked on him, this interview was not taking place. It does not happen at all.
Thanks.
Yeah, but that is an interesting one, though, just the idea that at that moment that he looked up and was just like, oh, okay, this is going to go.
Yeah.
It's like, so for you, though, like, when did you realize that, like, the NBA might be in your future?
Probably when I was probably my junior year in high school, played in the USA team. Then I played for in the McDonald's game, the Jordan Brand Classic game. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's go time. Like, I can get there for sure. Then I committed to Duke. And I had all these different offers, Kentucky, Duke, you know, all the big Michigan State. I knew, okay, as long as I play my cards right and I do what I'm supposed to do, I should be able to make it to the league.
And for you, you were there with Marvin Bagley.
Yep.
And so what was the relationship like for you two guys?
That's my guy. To this day, you know, we stay in contact. You know, I'm going to keep it honest with you. I was hurt when I saw he committed to Duke.
And for people who don't know, you had committed and then Bagley reclassified and then late decided he was coming to Duke.
Yep. And I'm not going to lie, it did hurt me. But, you know, after I'm meeting him and, you know, meeting his family, I knew he was just a guy just trying to, had the same goals as me, wanted to get to the league and, you know, do something special. So, you know, with us being very similar in that aspect, you know, I got along with him really well. And, you know, now we're both in the league.
Well, when you say it hurt you, what part of it hurt?
Just him committing, you know, because I knew things would change after he committed. It was told to me that, oh, yeah, everything's going to be built around you. Ooh. But I know, you know, Marvin Bagley, number one player in our draft class is coming to this school. You know, I'm going to have to share the wealth now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but it's all good. You know, everything worked out how it was supposed to. So I have no regrets in my decision at all.
Yeah, because I had wondered that because that was not right or wrong. That wasn't what you signed up for,
exactly.
Right? Like, and not it was not what you signed up for. This wasn't a thought.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, yo, you know, this cold dude.
Yeah.
And he kind of play a very similar position as what you play.
Yeah.
But I guess that also had to help to a certain degree your game.
Yeah, it did. It did. Like, just learning how to play with other great players, learning, you know, learning their strengths, learning their weaknesses. And just capitalizing on everything, you know, that definitely helped me in a lot of ways.
I got to ask you about the draft fits. I know it's been a while now, but everybody's going to remember that y'all showed up with the Gucci Wakanda situation. Now, whose idea was that?
That was actually my mom's. We was watching some TV, and it was a commercial with the dude who played Black Panther, and he had the drape that went across his black suit. She's like, oh, yeah, I like that. You should wear that for the draft. This was like probably like 2 or 3 months before the draft, and she was like, yeah, you got to get that, like, we going to match you in our own ways, but you got to get that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that. So I'm like, Mom, that's too much. I can either hit or miss. Like, I'm not too going in too aggressive on my outfit and stuff, but I looked at it. No, I had someone design it for me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I like it.
Oh, no, she had the right idea, man. It's the draft, baby.
Yeah.
I don't know Jalen walking around here. You ever see what he wore to the draft? No. You got to look for this fire engine red suit that Jalen Rose. Because back in the day, man, nobody cats ain't had no style or nothing like that. They was just picking out a suit for the first time, right?
Exactly.
You know, but, like, when you stepped in, y'all had to know, like, oh, we're killing this today.
Yeah, we was killing it. We definitely best dressed, I know for a fact.
So, like, when you look at your career, like, 10 years from now, what would you like to be able to say about it?
I'd like to be able to say that I surrounded myself with good people who got me to my end result, which is be a veteran in this league. You know, like, I'm not big on saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to be MVP. I just want to live my days the best way I can each day. That's how I kind of live. I don't really like to look too far in the future. I don't like to worry about my past at all with no regrets. Like, I just want to better myself each and every day. You know, that's my goal. And as long as I'm bettering myself each and every day for 10 years straight, I'm happy.
And this is interesting. You seem to have a very reasonable outlook on all of these things. Like, when you said it wasn't until, like, your junior year you thought the NBA could happen, I would have imagined that, like, from, like, freshman year, like, it wasn't like you just got good at basketball then, you know?
So
it's always been that you've just really looked at it as, like, kind of small steps in that way.
Yeah, I keep the reality in my head. You know, I have dreams. I have really, really big dreams, but I always want to keep reality there.
So when you're not playing, what are you doing?
I'm pretty open to a lot of things. I'm actually about to start this Twitch channel, with the video games and stuff. That's something I'm really, really big on. I like to hang out with my family a lot. You know, my mom and dad are both in Chicago now, so I spend a lot of time with them, usually in the gym, Trying to get better.
Now, how's this go with your parents being in town and trying to establish yourself as an adult while, I mean, this is a big old, like, world that you're in right now, so you totally understand why you need the people around you. But how's that go as you, you know, they're still your parents as you are seeking the independence that comes at your age?
It was tough at first, you know. With me being so young, they wanted to always be there for me, you know, all these different kind of ways. But this last year, I kind of tried to tell them, like, yo, I'm becoming my own man. You know what I'm saying? And it was a tough conversation, you know, because they wanted to be at my house every single day. They wanted to cook for me. They wanted to clean for me. I'm like, Mom, you got to let me grow up. And, you know, but well, my dad was, he didn't even want to come to Chicago. He kept trying to tell my mom, like, let him live. Like, he'll call on us if he need us. Trust me. Like, we was there for him all these years. He won't just leave us like that. So, I'm slowly but surely. My mom specifically is starting to understand, like, okay, let me let him grow up. It's kind of hard, but let me give him his space.
Oh, yeah, your mama don't never want to stop being your mama, right? Like, never. That's job one.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how it goes. Then you got to be like, hey, I need you to call before you come over.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
But that's good. How far away from you do they live?
First, they lived in the same building as me. They lived like a couple floors under.
Oh, so that had to change, huh?
Yeah. The very next year, I moved out. I was packing my stuff halfway through the season. I'm like, I got to get up out of here. Now I live like, you know, 5 or 6 blocks away. No, they're not too far, but they don't have a key to my house no more. They don't have none of that. Like, they have to call me or one of my homies I live with.
Yeah, like my buddy Dan Levitard, his mom is allowed to bypass the desk at his building. Father is not. Really? Right, like, he's like, no, my dad cannot come up here. Like, my mom, she's not going to do this. Yeah. My dad will just show up here at any point in time. Yeah. He can't. This can't be it for him.
Exactly.
So you said it was a hard conversation, but you said your mom, like, made peace with it.
Yep. Yeah, it was definitely hard, but, you know, I feel like every young man has that conversation with their mom or dad, whoever's, you know, in their life.
I remember the first one that I had with my mom. I was actually, it was late because I never really got pressed. I was a junior in college, and me and my girlfriend were going on a trip for spring break. And my mom was like, where are you going? I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to Myrtle Beach. She's like, oh, okay. And she's like, well, is she going with you? I was like, yeah. She's like, who else is going? Was like, anybody else going?
Yeah.
It is the most awkward silence I've ever heard on a telephone call. But it was the conversation that we had to have in life just to be like, nah, this is what it is.
Thanks.
You know? I didn't know what I was going to do. Like, if she flexed, I had no answer for what the response was going to be. Now, do you have siblings?
No, only child.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that makes it even
worse. Oh, man. Right. Yeah, she's doing her best.
I just ask no matter
what, you be patient with. She is absolutely doing her best on that one. But they got to be thrilled with all of this.
Yeah, they are. They excited. You know, they're there for me every day. They love it. You know, watching my highlights every day. Send me pictures of me, putting pictures of to me and then watching my highlights every day. So I know they're really excited.
Well, I got one last thing I'm going to ask you about, and this may have been for you, I imagine, maybe one of the most difficult adjustments about this change in life. What was that first Chicago winter hitting on for you?
Winter in Chicago is different. That's all I got to say. Different.
Like that first day that you realized that you thought you had a coat, right?
Yeah, I thought, I had me a nice North Face coat. I'm like, okay, I'm good. You know, you nice $200 coat. And I'm straight.
$200?
Yeah. The very next day, I went and spent about $5,000 on like 5 different coats. I'm like, I got to be prepared for this. Because it was like the beginning of the winter. It wasn't even as cold as it was going to be. Right. It was probably like 15 degrees, something like that. They're like, oh, this is nothing. This just started. Like, people walking outside with shorts on and stuff. Like, are you serious? I'm like, oh, my God. Then we had that crazy snow, that crazy storm. We were, like, negative, like, 50 degrees outside. Like, with the windshield, it was, like, negative 60 or something like that. And luckily, we was in Miami when that thing hit. We was playing Miami Heat, so I was good then. But, you know, people had died. Like, homeless people had died that day. Like, it was crazy. It was madness out there.
Yo, you can help me. I've been trying to explain this to people for a while. Yeah. It sounds like we just sound out of touch with mankind, but it's the truth. I say, if you cannot afford $1,000 coat, I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I bet for you, that is worth every dime that was put on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm just imagining you now in that coat that wouldn't work and walking in the store, just looking like, yo, I need help.
I need help. Needed help for sure.
Because I guess that was the other than like I guess the ACC doesn't send you to too many super cold places. Yeah. But that had you never really had no exposure to any place that was, and you on the lake.
Yeah, right there by the lake. That's what make it worse. That wind coming in. And
Hey, man, that is Wendell Carter Jr. Check him out with the Chicago Bulls this year, my man. I really appreciate you stopping through.
Appreciate you.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Wendell Carter of the Chicago Bulls. Also, thanks to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Also, I want to let you guys know we've got a fall series starting within the next week called Sideline that dives deep into the world of boosters and $100 handshakes in college football. It's a collaboration between The Right Time and Spencer Hall Site Banner Society at SB Nation. It'll be every 2 weeks in October and November. Spencer's going to join next week, then Marcus Spears, Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation, and then we'll close it out with Joel Anderson of Slate. We're excited about it. Think you'll enjoy it. So be on the lookout for more info. Also, be sure to check out the Bill Barnwell Show. This week, he chats with ESPN's Lindsay Theory about the Rams, Jake Trotter about the Browns, and Doug Farrar of USA Today about a little bit of everything else. Download, subscribe to the Bill Barnwell Show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You'll give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.